Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans. We chat about what they do in their civilian career, how they got there, and advice for other veterans who might consider that same career path. Today's episode number 155 with John Allen of Elite Meat.
We flew into New York and we had this one day event where we'd rounded up a number of former Navy SEALs that had gone on to be successful bankers and consultants and entrepreneurs. And what really happened is you had two sides, you know, of the transition, right? You have the professional side and the transitioning veteran side. And it was like they were meeting for the first time. It was like no one knew how to meet one another. And all of a sudden, when they're put in the room with each other, magic happens. I mean, there was no clear goal for this meeting. There was no, all right, guys, we're going to go in the room and you're going to look for jobs. It was like, hey, let's all meet each other because that's really important. And five job offers were made after this first event back on March 30th.
Well, there are so many reasons to listen to today's episode. One of the things that's so interesting about John's story is, you know, he had this very unexpected transition to a civilian career. He had ambitions of going to business school and consulting, and that all went out the window when he realized he was unexpectedly 8 weeks from his separation and he had to scramble to find a job. And that led him to talk about or to start a fantastic resource for veterans that is called Elite Meat. And he's going to talk about that as a resource, particularly for special operations, fighter pilots, people like that. He talks about founding a nonprofit. He talks about promoting oneself, which, as if you've listened to this show before, you realize that's a common pitfall that a lot of veterans struggle with, is being able to effectively promote themselves and talk about themselves in interviews, on resumes, and networking. One of the resources that Elite Meat has to help with that is they have a team that includes Pulitzer Prize winners who will help you create a 500-word essay about why someone should hire you. A fantastic, fantastic resource. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes, you'll find links to everything we discuss, including elitemeat.us, which you should definitely, definitely check out. And if you have time when you're done with all that to leave a positive review on iTunes, it would be greatly appreciated. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with John Allen of Elite Meat. Joining me today in Virginia Beach, Virginia, is John Allen. John, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give John's abbreviated background. He is the CEO and founder of Elite Meat, which actually Andrew Neuwirth and a couple other guests that I've had on the show have pointed me in John's direction. What Elite Meat is they are a nonprofit organization which connects high-performing transitioning veterans like Navy SEALs and fighter pilots with companies who are looking to hire. He started out at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, after which he served in the Navy as a Navy SEAL for 7 years. So, John, maybe actually to start off, could we just dive in a little bit about Elite Meat and how you would explain what you do to people on active duty?
Yeah, and it's funny. I've given my background so many times over the past year, and I'm still trying to nail it down. But I think that you just put together the shortest background for me that I've ever heard. So well done. You know, honestly, I've spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, what Elite Meat is, what it's going to be. But I think that in order to understand the genesis of Elite Meat and kind of what it does and where we're going, I think you need to understand kind of my role from the beginning and kind of how Elite Meat came to be. So for me, I actually back in very early 2017, I had been planning and prepping to go to business school. I had my eyes and my sights very, very set on Yale Business School. And my thought was that I would get my MBA and I would go into consulting. I mean, obviously this is all in theory, and I would have to actually do the work to get into these different places. But that was my plan, and that came after speaking to a number of former Navy SEALs that had gotten out of the military. Because for me, you know, backing up actually a step further, and probably the more important note about this is I actually was wounded in Afghanistan back in 2014. So my new guy platoon, I had just checked into a team and I went to Afghanistan within, I think about like 6 months from checking in. And about, you know, 90% of the way through our deployment, I was wounded by a grenade, actually. A grenade landed actually next to me, and it landed in a puddle and kind of that diffused the explosion a little bit. But it sent shrapnel into my hip, my leg. You know, it nicked my femoral artery, and I actually was, I very, very nearly bled to death. And, you know, obviously that's kind of a whole story in itself. But for me, because I lived through that and I ended up being medevaced out of country, and also a few other people were hurt in that explosion, but everyone lived to tell the tale. But when I got back to the United States, or actually, honestly, while I was in transit, while I was going through the medical procedures, I saw what actually had happened to my family, because the way it went down was because I was unconscious, and when I was in the middle of being transitioned from hospital to hospital, my family was notified that I was hurt, but then they were not really given any sort of clarity on how severe or where I even was for about 24 to 48 hours. Obviously, some of the people in my command reached out to them, but there was just such limited detail that essentially my family got the kind of late night knock on the door, literally. And I didn't realize that. So I come back to the United States, and in my mind, as a new Navy SEAL, you know, my first deployment, in a lot of ways, because I lived through it, I felt very much like I had almost validated myself, and I was excited about, you know, my next platoon, because now I'm, you know, a battle-tested Navy SEAL, you know. So for me, it felt like I had the street cred all of a sudden, but the damage that was done psychologically to my family, you know, that, you know, initially they were very, you know, they still are, but, you know, they're looking at me as a Navy SEAL, they're so proud, it's so interesting, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, it's such a dangerous job, and we nearly lost John. You know, I'm married, and I started to realize that, you know, if I was going to ever leave the SEAL teams, it would probably need to happen after my first enlistment ran out. So, and the reason I'm giving this background is not just to drop a war story on you. It's because there was a series of events that led me to make a pivotal decision about my contract, where I guess the rational person would have stayed in the military. But for me, I had made the decision to get out of the military because I was watching what my job and the implications of my job was doing to my marriage and to my relationship with my family, and it was kind of devastating. And so I made the decision to get out in early 2015. I knew I'd have another deployment, and I knew that I would be in the teams for, you know, another 2 years or 3 years. But what I did is, I started reaching out to other SEALs that had gotten out. I knew I had the time, and I really had set my sights on business school and then consulting. That just seemed like the right fit. It felt like business school, once I got out, there's that 2 years you're actually in business school. That's like, you know, my 2 years of transition. And then if you get a good job at like a McKinsey, Boston, Bain, you know, you're good, right? In my head, this is what I felt. So that's where I'm at. Early 2017, I'm at a training command. I've finished my second deployment, and now I'm at a training command. And I'm prepping to exit the military in the summer of 2018, right? So this hasn't even happened yet, this time frame. And I got called into the office, and they say, hey, you know, you're getting out of the, this is back in February now, February 2017. John, just so you know, you're getting out of the military in 8 weeks. We wanted to make sure that you're squared away with, you know, everything you need to get a job lined up. And it caught me completely by surprise, and I thought it was just a mistake, and they, maybe they read the year wrong. And I said, you know, I'm not getting out for another year and a half. And they said, no, you're getting out in 8 weeks. You haven't reenlisted, and you're set to get out in April. And so this, what had actually happened, to spare you the details of an actually fairly boring, like, discovery phase into what had actually happened. Essentially, there was a mistake made in how many months of extension time that I had used. Basically, I had signed up for a slightly longer contract. And essentially had disqualified myself for any short-term reenlistments And so when it came time for my contract to be up, basically my contract was set to expire early, to make it even shorter. Unbeknownst to me, it's going to expire early, about a year and a half early. And the gravity of realizing that now I need to find a job, right? And this is the point I was making about the rational person would stay in, because my wife's pregnant, I have a one-year-old, I have a house, I have no plans for employment right now. All I have is this idea that I'm going to miraculously go to B school, I'm going to get my MBA, go to consulting. Well, that's all out the window if I get out in 8 weeks, because I wasn't even set to, you know, go to business school till the end of 2018. So the decision for me and my family was, well, obviously, with the injury and having made this decision that I am definitely going to get out, I'm going to take the next 8 weeks to find a job. If I don't find a job in 8 weeks, I'll have to reenlist because I can't get out of the military with no options. And it was like the great irony was the amount of time I had spent researching my transition before it had even happened had all been kind of for naught because I didn't go the MBA route. So it started this fairly frantic search for a job. And I'll tell you, I felt like I really had a firm grasp on what I was going to do with my life. I really felt strongly that consulting was going to be the way for me. And it's like I felt so clueless when it was, okay, find a job now. I really, honest to God, had no idea where to start. And so I made a LinkedIn profile. And I don't even know really what I wrote on it other than, and we'll probably get to this, I put that I was a transitioning Navy SEAL on my LinkedIn. And for me, I feel like that's the one thing that really makes me stand out amongst a pool of many, many people in the country. And so I put that on my LinkedIn profile. And I just began kind of reaching out to people really with no clear explanation of what I was looking for in terms of help. And my co-founder, who I didn't actually know at the time, was this guy named Jordan Selleck, who is a former investment banker turned entrepreneur who was in New York. It just so happened that simultaneously, this person, Jordan, who I'd never met before, his closest friend, his name is Austin, he was a fighter pilot, and he was actually at Harvard Business School at the time. This was in the same window of time that I'm looking for a job in those 8 weeks. And so Austin, who is a former fighter pilot who's currently at Harvard Business School, was kind of off the cuff complaining to Jordan, his close friend, about, you know, how difficult it was to find a job. And I think Jordan just kind of looked at Austin and was like, dude, you're an F-18 pilot at Harvard Business School. You're going to be fine. But Austin imparted on Jordan, you know, I might have a better chance of getting a job, let's say, but there's a part of when you leave the military, it's not just you leave a job and you get a job somewhere else. There's a lot that goes into the transition, and it's especially difficult for people leaving, you know, combat units and the military in general. Really, if you leave the military and you go to the civilian world, there's this huge transition phase that a lot of people struggle with. Jordan, having no military background, he still didn't really believe it from Austin because he really had no experience with transitioning veterans. And he began going on LinkedIn to kind of maybe prove Austin wrong or something. He went on LinkedIn and he started searching for, you know, former fighter pilots, former Navy SEALs, former Green Berets, and just was basically cold calling them to ask them what they are doing when they get out. Because some people, you know, they put down that they used to be this or that. You know, what did you do when you got out? And what are the jobs that these guys typically get into? Essentially to like win the argument with Austin that, in fact, no, all these people are very successful and you're just complaining. Well, I was one of the people that Jordan reached out to on LinkedIn, and he sent me a message that just said, what are you going to do when you get out of the military? Because mine was, you know, a few weeks away. And he didn't realize that he was reaching out to someone who was like in desperate need of help, had no sense of what I was going to do next. And I said, look, you know, I have no idea what I'm going to do next. I don't even know you yet, but I'd love some help. And so the basically what came out of that interaction at first was Jordan seeing that I was not kidding, and we had a few more conversations where I just said, look, my resume is not really lined up. I don't really have a sense of what I'm doing. Here's my situation. He said, you know what, a big part of finding a job is networking. How much networking have you done? And I'm like, you know what, I've been in the military, and I have no network besides, you know, people in the military, and that doesn't really help you when you're trying to leave the military necessarily. And he said, well, look, let's do something about this. Here, I'll round up 25 business professionals from, you know, the financial services industry, some successful entrepreneurs, consultants. Jordan has a very large network in New York. So he's like, I'm going to round those people up. you round up people that are in positions similar to yours. Maybe not guys that are suddenly 8 weeks out from getting out, but certainly people that are transitioning and are maybe a little bit lost from the SEAL teams and other special operations groups. And so within a couple weeks, actually it was within 50 days, we went from that conversation to I pulled 20 transitioning SEALs, SWCs, pilots, and I said, hey, do you want to come to New York for a networking event? It didn't even have a name, by the way. It was just, let's go to New York, because apparently it's important to network. And Jordan rounded up his network, and we hosted this event in New York that was funded by the Navy SEAL Foundation and another organization called Hope for the Warriors, who I reached out to and said, hey, we'd like to fly these guys out. We want to keep the barrier to entry as low as we can, because, you know, these guys are in a very vulnerable spot being in transition financially, because they're about to be without a paycheck. Can we fund them all to get there? And so very generously, the SEAL Foundation and Hope for the Warriors covered expenses. We flew into New York, and we had this one-day event where we'd rounded up a number of former Navy SEALs that had gone on to be successful bankers and consultants and entrepreneurs. And what really happened is you had two sides, you know, of the transition, right? You have the professional side and the transitioning veteran side. And it was like they were meeting for the first time. It was like no one knew how to meet one another. And all of a sudden, when they're put in the room with each other, magic happens. I mean, there was no clear goal for this meeting. There was no, all right, guys, we're going to go in the room and you're going to look for jobs. It was like, hey, let's all meet each other, because that's really important. And five job offers were made after this first event back on March 30th. Of those five, a couple of them were soft job offers, just verbal, but two of them actually turned into full-fledged hires. You know, we have Kyle and Nick, who, if they're listening to this, you know, shout out to Kyle and Nick. They took jobs with a company called Resourcive out of New York, and that's entirely a product of being at this event. And the reason I'm bringing them up is kind of to come back to your initial question here, you know, what does Elite Meet do? You know, we are not in the business of taking our candidates and, you know, forcing them into a job just to take credit for it. The reality is what we start with is we start with the idea that our candidates are unique, that they're self-starters, and if we give them access to potential employers with a little bit of guidance, they can close the deal. As opposed to, you know, we make the introduction and we do all the talking and somehow they get a job and we act like we got them the job. You know, we take credit for giving them access, but ultimately it's on them to be a good candidate. And Nick and Kyle just crushed it. I mean, they were competing against a few other people for some positions at Resourcive, and they soared above the rest and were hired very quickly after that. And so from that event back in March, we said, hey, maybe it's a good idea to host some more of these events, if for no other reason than they're interesting and it's helping some people. Since then, we've hosted something like 13 events, if you count the small kind of seminars that we've done. We've hosted six major events across the country, and 18 people have been hired out of Elite Meet. And now, as we look to 2018, we already are prepping for a large event in Seattle in March and Houston in the summer, and a swath of other events along the way. And so I realize I probably just went on and on about a bunch of stuff, so I'll turn it back over to you to bring this thing
no,
back
it's,
in.
No, it's incredible. I mean, first of all, I had no idea about the injury, and I can only imagine how jarring that is, and the way that you put that is like incredible to think of seeing the impact that has on your family and how that, you know, led to your decision to leave the military. It's really incredible. And I think that the pain point that you're articulating is very, very real, where, you know, how many times have I heard that story of like just not, you know, having a plan and then having another wrench thrown your way and having 8 weeks to scramble. It's an incredible amount of pressure, and it's an incredible amount of expectation around wanting to get the transition right, but then having this frantic search for 8 weeks. And what I love most about what you said is I love this thought that these, you know, veterans do not need an excessive amount of spoon feeding. They don't need training wheels. They don't need the bumper bowling. Like if you give them just that intro and you give them the, you know, a group of people who are able to hire, like you're able to allow them to figure out what they want to do and to make that happen. And so it seems like you're starting to find this right balance of providing them with access and with support, but giving them a lot of free range to really figure out exactly what it is they like to do. And, you know, one thing that resonates with me is that I think a lot of times both, you know, military and civilian recruiting, sometimes my perception is that you're just kind of forcing a round hole into a square peg. You're just trying to rush to get someone to take a job because you're paid, I'm assuming, off of a, you know, the a recruiting fee. And so the faster you can place someone, the faster you get paid. And that oftentimes can lead, you know, this is just my perception, my assumption, that can lead to people accepting jobs where it might not be the ideal fit, or it might not be in their and their family's best interest. And so I, you know, the absurd image that comes to mind is kind of free range chickens. Like you've got, you've got all these incredible candidates and they're allowed to just kind of round, you know, freely roam around and figure out exactly what they want, because we are so unique in what we want and the lifestyle and the pay and the career and really what energizes us and lights us up. So I love that aspect of autonomy that you're giving to your candidates.
Yeah, in fact, just to kind of go off of that point, and not to toot our own horn here, but, you know, what really happened after that very first event in New York, and like I said to you earlier, it didn't have a name, you know, it wasn't Elite Meet, it was, hey, come to New York for this thing that I don't really know what it is yet. But, you know, what came from it is you have all these amazing veterans from total different experiences, different, you know, they've been in for 20 years, they've been in for five, right? They're all over the place. And there's no common baseline other than they're coming out of special operations with the fighter pilot community. That's really the only factor that binds them. And you have all these people that, for a lot of them, have never really interacted with that caliber of a person from the military before. I mean, you have people that, I mean, obviously there's incredible people that leave the military from all different rates. I'm not trying to suggest that the only incredible people are from special operations or the fighter pilot communities. But what I'll say about those particular communities, and I'm sure there are others as well, is that it's a very conscious choice to go that route. You don't accidentally become a Navy SEAL. You don't accidentally become a fighter pilot. You turn down other opportunity that your peers in college or in high school went off to pursue to one, serve your country, but do it in a way that's putting you very much on the front lines and putting you in harm's way. That's the combining factor. And so when you put that group of people in front of these potential employers and influencers and all these amazing people in New York, you know, suddenly people are like, oh my God, I want to hire you. And I found that because I was the one that had actually planned that event, from the guest list to the hotel, you know, like all the logistics, plus, gosh, I don't even know how many phone calls. And I did not have an elevator pitch. I mean, I was like, it took me like 4 hours to say who I was to everyone I talked to. But it was like I put together this event with really no sort of template. And at the back end, when it was all said and done, I was getting job offers. I was getting offered to work at companies, you know, that wanted me to consult. I mean, that was like the big thing. It's like, man, if you can put together this event, you know, what else can you do? I thought that, you know, you just pulled the trigger. And so what we decided very early on is we want all of our events to be planned heavily by the transitioning veterans, because if we're going to be reducing the cost to zero, maybe with the exception of Uber rides, if they're taking Uber rides in the city that we're having an event, if we're going to reduce the cost to zero, a way to legitimize why we're able to do that is by saying, well, you know, no one's going to be taking advantage of the free trip to San Francisco, let's say, because their peers have planned the event. And something that is absolutely critical in the special operations community and the fighter pilot community is your reputation. It is far more important than any of your medals. It is far more important than how long you've been in. It's what do your peers think of you? And that's what we needed to bring in. We wanted people to understand that even though you're transitioning out of a job that was your identity, for sure, you know, it's an identity crisis to some degree, you're still very much a part of this community and you need to represent it well. And so by asking people to go on and plan these events, which, by the way, all our events have been planned by the very people that we're looking to help. I mean, obviously, we provide the framework and we step in and we help with a number of things. But overall, I mean, like in terms of content, guest list, it's planned by the veterans. But what happens is as they're planning these events out, they get an enormous amount of exposure, and they get the opportunity to kind of show off their flexibility and show off, you know, what else they can accomplish besides just being a shooter. And so that is another layer to, you know, what Elite Meet does is we're not just, hey, we plan events and we invite you to them. We say, okay, if you want to come to an event that's paid for, you need to help plan it. And that way your peers understand that if they screw something up at the event, they're accountable to you. Because obviously there's an intense culture of accountability within special operations and fighter pilots, because literally the stakes are life and death. And so everyone is accountable to their peers, to themselves, to their team, to their country. And so we really want to keep that culture intact as they transition out, because that is very much our happy place. It's our sweet spot. And so a lot of people do their best work coming out of these communities.
Well, there's so many aspects I want to dive into on this, but let me go into a couple specifics first. So I know that you have a program called hashtag Commit to One, a mentorship program. Could you share a little bit more about that and how that works?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that program, really all it is the formalization of taking the business professionals from various industries and job functions from all over the country that have expressed interest in participating in Elite Meet to some degree. It's formalizing their relationship with one veteran, hence the name Commit to One. It's basically a professional is committing to one Elite Meet candidate, one Elite Meet veteran for an entire year. And the reason that we came up with this is we had, well, actually, and this is probably a question that'll come up, is how do you go about kind of putting together a nonprofit? And, you know, I think this is it's a great problem to have. It's that we have so many people that want to help. And I think that when you have a cause that's worth something, you have people kind of coming out of the woodwork when they hear about it and they want to help. Well, at some point, if everybody asks you, how can I help? You run out of things for people to do. And one of the incredibly obvious things that we were missing is formalizing relationships between people that have said, I want to help, I'm a believer in your cause. Maybe they had the background from the military, or maybe they're just passionate about veterans, whatever it is, they've committed explicit interest in helping. And so it was like, you know what, why don't we have them leverage their network, leverage their connections and their experience, and pair them with a veteran. And it's not random. It's usually, you know, if a veteran says, hey, I'd like a mentor from the Commit to One program, I'm interested in consulting. But we're not going to pair them with a writer or something. We're going to look for someone who's in consulting. So there's some basics to it. But ultimately, the relationship is very fluid, right? I mean, we monitor the relationship on a bi-monthly basis to ensure that there's at least interactions taking place. Because ultimately, if there's zero interactions, then that is a failed pairing and a Commit to One program is not doing its job. But if they're interacting regularly, what happens is if you have a motivated mentor, and that's key, they need to be motivated. And you have a candidate who's screened through our vetting process. To basically, our vetting process proves that you are also motivated and you're not just looking for a handout. And we put them together, and it's amazing what happens. I mean, you have people that have become very close friends that are, you know, God, I don't even know how many introductions have come from some of these initial first meetings. But I regularly get emails back from some of our candidates just saying, you know, your program's great, your events are great, but, you know, the connection you made to my Commit to One mentor, you know, I use them by name, this person, has already opened up all these doors that I didn't have. I'm sure they could have done on their own. I'm not insinuating that without us they would have nothing. But we like to think of ourselves as accelerators, and we have all these people that are really committed to helping this program. And what we do is we say, okay, well, we have a program where you're going to work for 1 year, and the expectation is the veteran that you're paired with, they need a job, a meaningful internship, or if they're looking to launch a business, you're going to help them launch a business by Veterans Day 2018. And we did not give rigid instruction on how that's supposed to happen. You know, obviously I've spoken with the mentors, but ultimately we want them, the mentors and the veterans collectively, to feel like it's on them that, you know, I will absolutely know if this relationship turns out nothing. You know, Elite Meet as a whole will know if this relationship turns out nothing. It's creating that accountability that is everywhere. It's the culture of accountability that is special operations and the fighter pilot community. And so adding a layer of like intense accountability to our mentors that want to help by saying, I don't know how you're going to do it, but you've expressed interest. Get this guy a job, this gal a job, help them get a meaningful internship, help them launch a business. Mm. do it in a year.
That's incredible. And I want to dive in also to a different aspect as well, because I think it's interesting the way that you've structured Elite Meat. You've got a lot of very innovative things. And one of the things I saw that is that you actually have excuse me. I get all choked up talking about this. you have the team of professional writers who create a personalized 500-word hire me profile. And I was curious to learn a little bit more about that process, but I was also curious for people who are on active duty listening to this, if you've seen any sort of trends or maybe even common mistakes that veterans make when it comes to promoting themselves. Because I know from so many of the interviews I've done, I realize this is something that most veterans botch, that they're not that great at promoting themselves. So could you talk a little bit about this Hire Me profile and then also any of those trends?
Yeah, absolutely. So to be clear, my professional writing team is my family, which just so happens to be a slew of professional writers. My my father and sister are both Pulitzer Prize winning journalists at the Boston Globe. My sister and my father both won a Pulitzer for their work on the Boston Marathon bombings.
Wow.
So they're incredible. And my mother also is a fantastic professional writer. So the three of them, I pretty much can just, we have a deal where they help me put together these Hire Me profiles. But it's not because it's a chore for them. It's because this is their way of contributing, because I think that they also understand that, you know, I made a decision to leave the military as much for me as I did for them. I loved being in the SEAL teams, but obviously with the injury, it obviously cut my career fairly short. And anyway, so they totally are excited about the idea of doing these profiles. We've done, I think, three, maybe four. And this is actually, this feeds perfectly into the second part of your question. So just to be clear, we advertise like crazy internally, on our Slack channel, our newsletter, you know, cell phone, text, whatever, that, hey, we have these professional Pulitzer Prize winning writers that will sit down and interview you and put together a 500-word Hire Me profile that's going to be really, really good. And we'll promote it like crazy, right? Guess what? No one responds. I get loads of responses for just about anything else I promote internally. Hey, there's a job opening. Hey, there's an event coming up. And you get a acceptable number of opens and clicks, right? People are interested. But the idea of coming out and saying, you know, I want to promote myself and then have it promoted on social media, like, it goes completely against the culture that exists within special operations, within the fighter pilot communities. And that's that culture of team first. It's team first. It's you, like, to say last is probably an understatement. I mean, you're the back end. But there's this great paradox of this way of thinking. Using the SEAL teams as an example, because as a former Navy SEAL myself, I can speak intelligently to this. Navy SEALs, when they get out of the military, and actually before they get out of the military, they all know that they have one definitive trump card. They have one thing that if they wanted to, they could exploit, they could leverage, whatever the word is, and it's the fact that they were a Navy SEAL. It doesn't take much to Google Navy SEAL or look at the newest movie coming out about Navy SEALs to see that they're very much a hot group of people. I think that what happens here is while you're in the military, while you're in the SEAL teams, it's easy to think about, well, if I ever got out, I'd be fine because I'm a Navy SEAL and somehow one way or another I'll be successful because people love Navy SEALs and I'm a thinking shooter and I'm so incredible. And a lot of it's true. But the problem lies in, okay, who's going to know you were a Navy SEAL? Unless you go full-fledged on the flip side and go out and promote yourself like crazy, who's going to know that you're such a qualified and amazing person? I don't think that special operations and fighter pilots do a poor job of advertising themselves. They don't advertise themselves. And if they do, they do it too much. They do it too over the top. It's almost like if they're going to advertise, they're going to go way beyond what's totally socially acceptable. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it, honestly, I have no idea what the interpretation of what I've done with Elite Meat has had on the way my peers think about me. But the way I justify it is, you know what? If I can advertise myself and I can advertise, you know, my experience in the SEAL teams and by extension, my experience in the military and special operations and any positive impacts I get from that, I can find a way to feed directly back into my community, even if they hate me for it. I know that's worthwhile. And so I was definitely of the mindset of, oh my God, I don't want to even say that I'm a Navy SEAL. And I'll tell you, it was difficult. And even when I was faced with 8 weeks till I got out of the military, it was difficult to put Navy SEAL on my LinkedIn profile because it went against, you know, what you're kind of taught from day one, which is you absolutely do not tell people what you do. Even though, all it takes is a simple Google search to see what Navy SEALs do, where they are. So I think that it's not really a lack of, or it's not a, you know, being inexperienced at self-promotion, although I'm sure there's quite a bit of that, and there is. It's even more extreme. There is no promotion, and if there is promotion, it's done inappropriately. And so one of the things that I actually do a section about at our events is social media, and I kind of level with the crowd. It's usually between 20 and 30 transitioning vets, you know, SEALs, fighter pilots, Green Berets, Rangers, MARSOC. There's a whole group of people, and some people I've had zero working experience with. But I'll say, you know what? You all have this experience. You have this unique military experience that people are going to be interested in. Yes, there are going to be some people that are going to be interested in you just because, you know, you're kind of like Billy Badass, right? At least on paper. There are going to be people that are going to look at you that way, and that's all they're going to see. But there's also going to be an enormous group of people that are going to be very interested in you and maybe hadn't considered even looking into the Special Operations World for a candidate. But if they don't know you exist, how in the world is there won't even be those two classes of people. There'll be no one looking at you. So you need to find a way to tell people who you are and what you've done. And I think that is the starting point that is the most difficult to overcome because guys just feel really uncomfortable with it. And so that's something that we're still kind of working out exactly how we want to go about kind of coaching guys through self-promotion. But I do think for us, it's a matter of actually getting guys to say, okay, I'm willing to literally make a LinkedIn profile. Just make a LinkedIn profile. It doesn't even have to say Navy SEAL on it. It doesn't have to say Green Beret on it. Because again, that's just, it's experience that you don't get while you're in the teams, when you're in your platoon. In fact, it's experience that frankly, you're getting the opposite of while you're in the military. You're inundated with this idea that if you so much as mention who you are, what you've done, that you're going to destroy your reputation and everyone's going to hate you. But again, you know, if that's your big thing, that you were a former Navy SEAL, you got to find a way to tell people because otherwise no one's going to know.
That's so great. I mean, I love the way you put that. I think it makes a ton of sense that there's just this inherent aversion to talking about what one does. And, you know, I say that also realizing how essential it is for them to be able to do that. I think it's so wild that, you know, first of all, you have Pulitzer Prize winning team writing these profiles, but I think it's so telling that so few people are willing to take you up on that. And it's something I'm still trying to get my head around of like how to help the veteran community get past that. It's such a difficult challenge because it is so vital to be able to speak to one's accomplishments and to speak to the value that one brings to the table. And I also understand any veteran's hesitancy to do so because there's been years or decades spent fighting that and having a very strong
yep.
culture that is against that.
Yep.
I'm wondering, you know, in the experience you've had so far, what are some types of companies that you found looking to hire your members, or, you know, whether there's industries that stand out or particular stories that stand out? I just want to give people a flavor of the types of jobs that people are finding or the types of people who are looking to hire in this.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a couple layers to this. You know, on the one hand, you have what we've been able to document pretty easily and quickly is where do our candidates' interests lie? At first, like, you know, a lot of people don't really have a clear sense of, you know, what they want to do. But, you know, fairly quickly it becomes, well, I want to start a business. I want to be an entrepreneur or be entrepreneurial. I would say that makes up at least 50% of our candidates' number one, you know, desire for their transition is being an entrepreneur or being entrepreneurial. The other 50% is so all over the place. I mean, it ranges from I want to go be a farmer to I want to be a hotshot banker in Southern California or New York. But I would say that the entrepreneurship piece is one that we've found seemingly a fairly good match for, because while we can't possibly, unless we became, you know, a Y Combinator or something, we can't possibly take, you know, 100 plus candidates and say, we're going to launch all your businesses and we're going to fund you. We can't do that. Not now. What we can do is we can get them employed by Series B, like growth stage startups, because I think that interests our candidates quite a bit. And then putting them into like an operations type role within a startup, particularly the reason I say growth stage is because they simply have the money to cover an employee with let's say an 18-month runway. That's reasonable to assume. So putting guys into operations roles within growth stage startups, that's something that we're looking to do. And so far, here a success story is we had a candidate who it worked out kind of ridiculously well in terms of what he wanted and where he ended up. And this is early on. We saw there was this big desire for guys to be entrepreneurial, and no one really knew how they were going to do that, but that was the idea. I think they liked the idea of challenge. I think that people that go through selection programs to become this or that, you know, SEAL, fighter pilot, there's a desire for something with an attrition rate. And I think that entrepreneurship is the most obvious. So this candidate, he wanted to move either to New York or Boston. You know, he had, I want to say, 5 kids. I know he had at least 4. He was a Navy SEAL officer. And, you know, he was like, I'm interested in the idea of working in an operations role within a startup, because we're kind of talking this up internally, this idea, and would people be interested if we start really trying to leverage our network to find some roles in these positions. And he said, yeah, I'd be interested. And it just so happened that we had a connection with a company out in Boston. It's a food lab. And they were looking for a COO. And the founder had just read the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink, the famous former Navy SEAL who looks and acts very much like a Navy SEAL, or the way you'd think a Navy SEAL would. Yeah, he's awesome. But he, so his book, this founder had just read this book, and he's like, you know, I can hire, you know, I have tons of people I can hire from in Boston. What I don't have is a pool of Navy SEALs to choose from. And I was like, that's interesting. So we actually have someone that's looking to move to Boston that is a seasoned, older Navy SEAL who actually is friends with Jocko in real life. And so he ended up getting the job as the COO of this food lab out in Boston. Wow. And by all accounts, it's going extremely well. Truthfully, that's a big success story. That's not going to be, you know, every day we're putting guys into COO roles. I mean, frankly, as much as it's a big decision for the candidate to take a job like that, it's a huge decision for a growth stage startup. I mean, especially like a lot of these people we're talking to, a lot of these companies, you know, this is probably going to be their first major outside hire. And so just there's an enormous decision there. So for them, it's a big decision. So it's a bit of a slower path. I think the more traditional roles and jobs that have come up have been consulting. Boston Consulting Group, they actually recently sponsored us, and they're going to be recruiting out of our event in Seattle in March. And from their eyes, because they had a principal came and spoke at our event back in May, and he saw the talent pool, you know, firsthand, and he was kind of blown away. And he said, you know what, I would love to recruit, you know, guys for a traditional management consulting job, but essentially waive the MBA, and we'll just take their unique military experience as the waiver for their MBA. And I mean, obviously there's more to it than that, but I mean, they're recruiting for traditional management consulting positions starting in March. you know, positions normally reserved for people with MBAs. And we have plenty of people with bachelor's degrees, but, you know, far fewer have the MBA. And that's a big discussion point for our candidates is, do I get an MBA or not? And this is not just for Boston Consulting Group. It's because that has been like the go-to decision for guys leaving the teams and the fighter pilot communities is just go get your MBA because you can leverage your military experience and you can get your MBA, you know, and then you can go on and have your big happy life. So I think a lot of people assume that that's probably a something they may end up doing. And so having a company like BCG, which is, you know, one of the big time consulting companies saying, hey, you know, we'll actually, we'll look at you as a legitimate candidate without the MBA. I mean, that's huge for us. We also have some 1099 consulting work. Business development jobs are going to be huge no matter where you go. Doesn't even matter what size of the company. And then obviously we definitely have a good amount of people that come through Elite Meet have expressed interest in financial services. And, you know, I think that, you know, obviously the success rate of placing guys into like PE jobs is going to be incredibly low. But I think that one of the things we're able to do with the finance side of the house for guys coming in that are looking at that as a career path, one of the things that's overlooked when you're, you know, trying to figure out what you're going to do next is ruling out options.
Yep.
Because I think that the idea of going into finance is very sexy because of the high pay traditionally. You know, you get to wear your cool blue suit and you get to be in New York and San Francisco and it's all cool. But like, what does that actually look like? And so while we can't by any means like just throw you into, you know, Goldman or something, what we can do is we can have you meet just about anybody you want over at Goldman. We can have you learn about what it actually means to be a banker, what it means to be in PE, and actually talk to people that do it day to day. And even better, we'll find people that are, you know, former Navy SEALs, former Green Berets, you know, former basically Elite Meet eligible veterans that are actually in those different positions and have them give them the kind of straight talk about what it takes and what it looks like. And you have a lot of guys that actually decide, you know what, finance is not really something I'm into. And for those that are interested in it, they become super hardline. And then we can actually hook them up with, we have a partnership with Training the Street, which is a banking boot camp for Wall Street hopefuls. And they've given us free access to their financial modeling course that we can give to guys that are pretty serious about getting into banking. So consulting, financial services, but again, I think that we serve more as an exposure group for finance. We certainly can put you in touch with people that might give you an internship, but that's going to be on you to make the decision about finance. And then entrepreneurship is huge, and we know a number of VCs out in the Valley that are pretty committed to, you know, taking our candidates seriously if they pitch an idea. And we have a number of key advisors that are also either, you know, angel investors or VCs. So I'd say half our candidate pool is hardcore into entrepreneurship. The other half is at least moderately interested in that or, you know, consulting or banking, sales, kind of all over the place. But those are kind of the major pillars of what we traditionally see.
This is great. I know we are short on time. One other question I just wanted to ask is just the other side of the story. You know, you talked about briefly about starting a nonprofit. I'm just curious if someone is listening and it's their intention and desire to start a nonprofit, what's one piece of advice that you would give to them as they think of starting a nonprofit?
I think that the biggest takeaway that I've had, and this probably applies outside of nonprofits, so I probably am doing a bad job answering your question, but I think that realizing that you're way more capable and way more respected than you think you are. You know, when you start a company, let's say you start Company X. At first, it's really fun to run Company X because you have this great idea and you've just started. And you're kind of you versus the world, right? It's an easy mentality to take. Every little success feels huge, and you know, as people watch you succeed, you know, it just feels great. You feel like you're being validated left and right. And if it fails, you know, you're so small time that it doesn't really blow away your ego. You know, life's okay. What happens when you start seeing some success and now there's expectations placed on you? Because now people have seen you grow. They've seen you do some things. You've been asked to be on Beyond the Uniform podcast. How do you respond when people look at you and they have real expectations of what you're going to accomplish? That is far more difficult to manage than starting something. Starting something is having motivation and having a clear sense of what you want to start with, because it's going to change. Having a strong team But then what do you do when people say, okay, I'm buying. Show me you can do this again. Repeat your success. Get better. Those are questions that are very difficult to answer, and that's when you need to lean very heavily on advisors. Rope in advisors and lean on them. That is the key to success for once you've reached a point where expectations are placed on you, because you can crumble very quickly if you're not managing expectations.
Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and I just love your story. I love the work that you're doing. I think there's a definite need for that, and I love the approach that you and your team are taking in setting up these events. But I want to just leave a room that, you know, if there's anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to share with listeners, I just want to give you the floor for some final words of wisdom.
Yeah, I thought about, you know, what I might say at the end here, and I think the one thing that I'd like to address to anyone listening to this is a very common misconception about elite meat. And it's probably because we haven't done a very good job of really messaging. But we did not say, okay, Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Special Operations, you know, MARSOC, Rangers, fighter pilots, those are the only guys we're going to take because they're somehow better. That's not the way it went. What happened is I never intended to start elite meat. We, as a collective team, never meant to start it. And when it started happening organically, my network was Special Operations. The people that I knew in the military, that was who I knew. And so, you know, what you see with Elite Meat is it's very much kind of a niche group we're trying to help. But it's because we believe that we need to focus on something we know really, really well and get really excellent at working with that group before we start going outside of it. And so I think that people might think for, you know, oh, we're being, you know, we're pushing people out that, you know, didn't go through Special Operations, but, you know, maybe they were an Army grunt that was like in Iraq, you know, three or four times or whatever. Like, there are amazing veterans all over the place. I have met hundreds of them since I started Elite Meat. But I think we're really trying hard to stay to our lanes for now. I think it's almost like the easy button to just say, oh, we'll take all kinds. I think that we'd be doing a disservice to everyone. So I like where we're at now. I like the idea of really focusing on Special Operations and fighter pilots, because that's who we know. It's our network, and that's where we're going to really try to succeed in 2018.
I love that, and I'll you know, chime in on that, in that I think, you know, my experience in startups has been you have to have such a laser focus, and you have to start with such a small niche, and you know, eventually many times expand beyond that. But the one of the number one detriments I see towards people starting any organization is that they are trying to be all things to all people. And an essay that I really like by Kevin Kelly, it's 1,000 True Fans, and his premise of this whole essay is that if you start anything and you have 1,000 people that love what you do, that's enough to build an empire. Like, if you have 1,000 people that where it really meets that need, and you don't have to start by meeting everyone's need, because that then everything gets watered down. So I respect what you're doing in focusing on, you know, a smaller community that has specific needs, and I imagine that will parlay well into helping more people if you choose to go that route. But I think it's sure. It's the tougher discipline to do what you're doing, which is really be discreet in where your focus is. I think that's really spot on.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate that, and I plan on looking up that article. That sounds interesting.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And for listeners interested in learning more, you can find out more. It's is it elitemeat.org?
It's .us, most common .us.
elitemeat.us. You can find more there. You can see their list of upcoming events. You can see all sorts of things about what they are doing, and check that out for sure.
Surface.
All right. Well, I hope that you enjoyed that episode. I love that, you know, one of the things that stuck out with me, first of all, John's just a fantastic guy. I love his passion and enthusiasm, but also just his practical nature and how down to earth and just really smart in how he is running Elite Meat. But one of the things I really loved that he talked about was how reputation matters most. And that was his experience in the military. And that's his experience now with running Elite Meat. And I like that the events are planned by the people they are helping. It makes me think of service to school. And one of the reasons I love that organization is that they actively involve veterans at different college and grad school programs to help other veterans get in there. And it's kind of that on the ground, low to the ground approach that makes them so successful. It seems like Elite Meat has that as well. And they're really keeping things true to their roots. And I admire and respect what John is doing with Elite Meat. If you have a chance and this is of interest to you, check them out. It is at elitemeat.us. And hope you enjoyed this show. If you did enjoy it, please pass it on to anyone else who might benefit from it. And I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.